Welcome to For the Love of Books, Bees Books Edition, a podcast by North Lanarkshire Libraries.
Hi, this is Betty.
And this is Jenny, and we're here to talk about
Bees Books. Well, today we have a surprise guest. I don't think any arm twisting was required, Jenny.
No, definitely.
There might be the promise of chocolate.
A day off, maybe.
I've been doing this for nearly a year, and I've had no such. I should be more difficult. But anyway, do you want to introduce yourself, mystery guest?
Hi, I'm Mark, and I work with the lovely Parry and Jenny.
Oh, that was nice.
So this time, we're really excited because we have a guest. And because the theme, I think, that we have allows for a lot of different interpretations. Mine's quite a tenuous interpretation of the theme of balance.
Mine's is very, very literal.
Oh, that's
I
good.
I think because last time I was extremely vague. So I'm very, very literal this time.
What about you, Mark?
I think mine's works.
Okay.
But so I just made a prompt work for the book.
Yes.
Excellent.
Bee's a fan of that. So do you want to start with your book?
So my book is called Let the Great World Spin by Colum McCann. And it is sort of very loosely based on a tightrope walker.
I can see that on the cover.
Balance, which you need a lot of if you're walking. And it's basically he walked between the Twin Towers back in the 70s.
Oh.
And it's a kind of story within a story within a story.
And it's based on a true...
So it's a true event, and then it's like lots of... It's basically people who looked up and saw him. It's kind of some of their stories. It's very good.
It's very literal. I think I've seen the documentary about it, Man on Wire, I think, which is very good, and he is a madman.
Yes, he is. There's also a film called The Walk the lovely
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yes.
Oh.
I've seen that. I've not seen the documentary, but that's good as well.
I didn't know this was a genre. Tightrope walking in the air.
So I can't even remember the guy's name now. He only appears in this very briefly. It's more of the story of the people looking up.
Okay.
But I did, after I read this the first time round a few years ago, go and do some research and kind of, mad as a hatter.
And how they managed to pull it off to get into both buildings to get the wire across is just phenomenal.
Yes. Oh, was there a hoodwinking involved?
There was bow and arrow. And
that is not what I expected.
Fishing wire and then slightly heavier rope and then slightly heavier rope until they could get it. And I think it took them something ridiculous, like 16 hours or something. I might be making it up.
Yeah, and then he went across a few times, didn't he?
Yes, and he danced across at one point. He lay down at one point, all the while at the very top of the Twin Towers.
I think this was all a distraction. This is my hot take, my theory. I think this was all a distraction while his gang did heists.
Maybe.
somewhere.
I kind of like the idea of going back and looking at the news reports in the 70s and finding out if on that day there was...
I think you're onto something. Yeah. Definitely.
Anyway, enough about mine. Mark, what did you choose?
I chose James by Percival Everett. So this... Balance, because it's based on Jim from Huckleberry Finn. So we're getting Jim's side of the story as opposed to Huck's. So they split up a few times within the book in Huckleberry Finn. So in this, they obviously split up as well, and we get James's side. So James is about Jim, who's a slave, who runs away when he finds out he's going to be sold. And he doesn't want to split up his family. So he decides to run away so he can get money, come back and buy his wife and child. On the way, he bumps into Huckleberry Finn, who's also faked his death. They end up going down a venture down the Mississippi. It's about James trying to find himself, trying to find his name and reclaim that, and work within the confines of the South for a black man.
Oh, there's a lot to talk about in both our books. What about yours?
But just before I move to mine, the writer... He does see, he seems to be having a moment. I'd never heard of him before. I've already forgotten his name, Percival Everett. But even before you brought it up, I know Mark mentioned this book to me last week, I think, or a couple of weeks ago. And even before that, just online, I'd been seeing a lot of like interviews, reviews about this writer, suddenly like this cultural kind of something's happening. Maybe because of the movie that we might talk about a little bit, but yeah, okay, well, yeah. So mine is actually really old. It's called Hyperbole and a Half by Ali Brosh, and the subtitle is Unfortunate Situations, Flawed Coping Mechanisms, Mayhem, and Other Things That Happened. So as you can see, it's like a mix. So it's non-fiction. So she writes about incidents and events from her life, but she also draws them. So it's a mixture of words and drawings. And she uses like a sort of Apple version of MS Paint. It's called Paintbrush. So it's quite crude looking drawings, but she puts in a lot of effort. I was just reading interviews with her before we recorded. She puts in a lot of effort to make herself seem as unhinged as she is on the inside, on the outside. And she writes about like her childhood, her adulthood, like all sorts of things. But I think it's a balance between, well, real life, just like everyday happenings, and complete lunacy. And sometimes balance between, like, she got really famous for these two comics that she made on depression. So, and she writes that she, like, humor is her coping mechanism. She calls this book stand-up comedy in book form. So all of it is so funny. And she wanted to strike a balance between, like, levity and, you know, like, humor, but also respect for talking about something that she's gone through, but also other people have gone through. She got really famous for her blog called Hyperbole and a Half, like, in early 2010s, which is when I discovered it. This like teenager or like early 20s in India, and I fell in love completely. It's so funny. This book is 2013, so about 11 years. And I read it first like a few years ago, and I wanted to reread it now for this theme, just to see what I thought, because I'm a different person. She's probably a different person. And I read it on Sunday, just on my sofa, and I was cackling so much that my cat, who was trying to, like, you know, cuddle with me on my tummy as I read, was really mad that I kept like shaking with laughter and just like walked off in a huff. So I couldn't provide the balance that he needed in his life.
See, so this is good, because I have seen the documentary for yours, Jenny, and I have the second book. I've not read it yet, but I know of Ali, is it Brosh?
Uh-huh. Yes. Do you have the second book? I might ask to borrow it from you.
Because be
I've been looking for it in all my libraries. I have access to quite a few. Zero. Nowhere has the second book, even though it's a few years old, I think.
Yeah, it is, yeah, yeah.
So you know Hyperbole and a Half.
I know of it, yes, yes.
Yes.
Have you not read the first one then?
I've not read it, no, because they're not entirely.
No.
Not
so it doesn't matter if you've not read
it. It doesn't.
Okay.
I mean, even in this, like, it's a few of her blog posts, so, like on her blog, it's all available for free. This has some new things and some updated art and stuff, but you can just go and like spend a weekend just going through this old blog of hers. It's just so funny the way her brain works, much like Percival Everett and this guy on the tightrope here, I think, just like completely mad. But she, you know, even when she's writing about really difficult topics and sometimes like really scary things that happened to her as she was a child or with her family or whatever, she still wants, because she uses humor to cope, she's still like, it's just so funny. And sometimes like I felt very much identified with her in not a very comfortable way. But it's just like, I just love her and her brains. I would recommend this to even people who don't read nonfiction, because it's just like you, Jenny, it's just, I don't know, it's just like hanging out with a mad buddy, I think, a little bit.
I like that the dog looks completely unhinged as well.
Yes. This dog is Simple Dog, because as she describes him, is mentally impinged. As is not a very clever dog. Except, and you know, she has these turns of phrase that like the writer in me like completely falls in love with, or the reader in me. She calls him, so you know, he's very bad at like learning tricks, at like doing what is told, like sit or climbing stairs. Took him a week to learn how to climb the stairs. Couldn't do it. But when he's in the dog park, this is the only time he shows some cunning and some agency. he becomes situationally quadriplegic is what she calls him. Like, he just like flops down and no, my legs don't work, I don't want to leave, like every time they have to leave. And there's just so much of that. Like, she's definitely like a proper writer. She's been writing since she was in college, and drawing as well. Like, it's all like when she draws herself, it's all just like increasingly unhinged in the best possible way.
Oh,
yes.
Nice. And why did you pick up the second book?
I'd heard about it. I like non-fiction graphic novels.
Yeah.
You get quite a lot from them. So I just heard about it and I was like, okay, pick it up. But like I say, I was, like you said, it was when it came out, so it was a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. Still not picked up. But I am looking forward to it.
But the second book, I must warn you, I think, like, again, because I was reading some interviews, because after this book came out, she disappeared from the internet for 6 years. It was mystery. And I was reading out about what was happening to her. I think it's quite tragic. A series of tragedies happened to her. Yeah, it was very sad. So, good luck.
I would hope, though, that she's written the second book, that she's kind of...
Mm-hmm. Found her right back.
Yes.
Sure. Yeah. I like how optimistic you still continue to be in the year of our Lord 2024.
I might give you a loan of it so you can
check
out
see
first.
What it's like. Just make sure.
Well, speaking of tragedies, James.
Yes, well, just as you were saying about the author, Percival Everett, he's wrote over 30 books. And so he's the last, wasn't the last one, it was the one before, it's called The Trees, which was very good, and that's what brought me to him. Been saying this about him. He writes books that you want to get to the end, mm-hmm. but you don't want it to finish. You just want to pick up, but you never want it to. Mm-hmm. You know, it's that's how good a writer is, for me anyway. And with this, it's just great, because when you hear about it, I think Jim deserves to have his story told.
Yeah.
He's a very good character in Huckleberry Finn, but he is kind of left to the mm-hmm. side, because it's obviously Huckleberry Finn's adventure. But in this, it's just good. You know, they have this dialect within the slaves, so they talk normally to each other. But then there's a scene where he's teaching about six kids how to speak properly in front of white people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, right, if there's a fire, what do you say? And one of them makes it, oh, you say something like, oh, watch the fire. It's like, no, that's too much, that's too smart. They need to see the danger before you. So you just, oh, look, there's a fire. And then, we'll put it out. And it's like, okay. So you've got things like that. You've got, he meets a con artist.
Mm-hmm.
He ends up being part of a minstrel show.
Mm.
Yes. So therefore, he's in the space of a black man pretending to be white. Pretended to be a black man, yes.
Oh,
so,
very fascinating.
And that's, again, another good thing. You were saying about the humour with
mm-hmm.
that. But there's a lot of levity, so the humour is brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, again, with the trees, very dark subject, but the humour really carries you through it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easier to digest because of that. It's the same with this, you know, it can be distraught at times. You can find it really funny. And it's great. It's great to be along an adventure with James as he finds his agency, even though he's got it, but to find it in the world so everybody else can kind of see it. So it's fantastic.
We both like retellings as well, don't
absolutely.
We? Absolutely. And I know that you've spoken about this author before, especially the trees.
Mm-hmm.
But I recently, because I knew you were doing this, read a very, 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 very edited version of Huckleberry Finn, and it's something that's passed me by, the original story. You kind of know the story, but I would think of it as more of kind of an American thing. So, you know, it, like Catching Her Eye, you know, it's a kind of classic, but not one I'm particularly interested in. Know the story, but, you know, so this very, 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 very edited version, you still get a sense of Jim and Huckleberry's kind of relationship, if you see what I mean. And basically the very, 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 very edited version basically goes, oh, they did this, they did this, and they did this. But even there you could see, and I think it would be interesting to read this before I go back to read the full version of Huckleberry Finn, just to see.
Have you read Tom Sawyer? Is it Tom Sawyer? It's
The Adventures of Tom Sawyer.
Yeah, that's where you meet Huckleberry Finn. Yeah, so, like, I want to do the opposite in that I want to go all the way back. Because I think, like you, I think Huckleberry Finn might have passed me by a bit. Or I read it so long ago that I remember very little. I do remember Tom Sawyer reading it at some point and, like, meeting Huckleberry Finn in that. So I want to read Tom Sawyer and then Huckleberry and then this.
Well, see, I think you should go backwards. I've not read Tom Sawyer, but I know it's seen differently for Mark Twain's books. Obviously, Huckleberry Finn is his, like, seen as his big one. But this, I think, makes it better, the story, if you go backwards. Yeah. And there's some changes. A lot of stuff's the same. There's some changes. There's change. I think he brings it forward 10 years, so it's during the Civil War.
Right.
So it gives James that kind of, you know, people keep saying, there's a war breaking out, you're going to have your freedom. He doesn't see how that can be.
Yeah.
You know, and like I said about the dialect as well, the language, there's scenes, I'll not say who, there's a scene with Huck as well, where he starts talking normally, and they just cannot comprehend. You know, that scares them more than anything else that's happening around in the scene. It's just like, what did you say? You know, it's taken aback, and that's what's very interesting, is how he's just seen as a product as opposed to a
person.
So that
reminds me of the movie. So I did some prep as well. I did not read a very edited version of Huckleberry Finn. I did watch American Fiction, which is a movie that's based on one of his books, Percival Everett's books, called Erasure.
Yeah.
So Mark had, like, mentioned it to me when he was talking about this book. It's on Prime, if anybody has a subscription to that. And it's such a good movie. It's so funny. Even though it says, like, it has Oscar buzz, I think it won.
It won Best Adapted Screenplay, yeah.
Yeah, and sometimes, like, these Oscar-type movies, you know, they take themselves very seriously, and I'm like, is this the kind of movie I want to watch right now in the depth? Well, I guess it's not the depths of winter.
No, it feels like
still, it. It still feels like it. That's more like a summer thing, I think. I want comfort. But it's just a really funny movie, but also very witty. Because that, it talks, like, you know, a little bit about what you were saying, this sort of the black, being blackness, like what white people consider black versus the kinds of stories that black people want to say and black writers want to say. But so it's more about the publishing industry, like the contemporary publishing industry in the US and the kinds of stories. So now, you know, we need diverse books, diverse voices. It's all the trend. And they're trying to capitalize on this trend. But even then, they're painting it in a very narrow sort of field. So black people are only able to say specific kinds of stories and sort of stereotype themselves. But because it's coming from a black person, it's okay. You know, like it makes it okay. And he's so clever with it. Like, he doesn't give, like, easy, lazy, I think, answers. It's a very sort of complex and nuanced portrayal, but also really funny. I wasn't expecting it to be so funny. He doesn't take himself too seriously, so which is why I was immediately enraptured by the way his brain works, I think, because he's talking about these issues. This, in James, much more serious, I guess, issue than, like, the kinds that's coming now. But he does it in, like, a really light way, but still, like, a cutting way, I think. So I would recommend that movie to you for sure.
Yeah, it's very good. And the book that it's based on is very good as well, but it's very close. It's well done, adapted that way. And, yeah, even the fact that he's such a great writer in the film and the book, but because he's not writing those kind of stories, he just can't get published. They're like, no, you're a great writer, that's why we can't publish you.
When he's in a bookshop, that scene, which was so, like, I think encapsulates it so perfectly. So he goes to a bookshop and he's looking for his books, and he asks, like, in, like, whatever section it's supposed to be, literary fiction or whatever, and he can't see it. So he asks the bookseller, you know, do you have any books by this writer? So he looks it up and he takes him to the African American studies section, and he's like, my book has nothing to do with African American studies. Like, what's going on? And it's just like a book. Like, it's a, so he's like, oh no, this is what, you know, was decided. And then, like, his agent tells him that you need to write more black stories. And he's like, I'm black, whatever stories I write are black stories. So it's really interestingly done. And some are really briefly glanced at, like, the points. But because me and my friends, like, from an Indian perspective, talk a lot about publishing and the sort of diversity problem where it's only some stories are overrepresented. Mm-hmm. Like I have to recommend it to them as well because it's just like so well, like, yeah, so well portrayed, I think.
For what you've said about this author before today and today, he does seem to do a lot of research as well. He does seem to get right in there.
I was listening to a pod today actually, and he was talking about how he researches for such a long time, but once he's finished the book, he forgets it.
Oh.
He can't remember. So people ask him about it, like, oh, what about this? Did you mean this? And he'll be like, yeah.
Sure.
But yeah, no, that's what he seems to do. Like, he was talking about what he's working on, and now he's like, I'm reading so many books, because he keep asking me, are you working on something? And he's like, I hope so. You know, all this research is for nothing. But yeah, so, but that, like I said, over 30 books, I'm so glad, because I've read three, loved every one of them, and I'm going to go back and try and catch them. Also, I say I got this. This is a proof copy, and I got this from Pan Macmillan, the publishers, early by email, and I'm so glad I did, because I've been desperate.
So it's not out
this.
Yet.
No, it's out in April. So
oh,
I think.
Oh, so we have a secret.
I think it's a 12 or something like that. But yeah. So it's.
Oh, fantastic! And this is I'm definitely going to pick up this writer. I'm fully sold on, like, it isn't the kind of writing I think I usually would have picked up, but the movie and your sort of recommendation totally sold it. Turning to your literal balancing act.
I don't want to
act.
Talk about my book now. Yes, I read this a while ago. It was out in 2000, I think all our books, well, not your book, but it's not even out yet, but it's based on a book from the past. And basically this guy who I can't remember his name at all, help me out here, Mark.
I can't remember.
Okay, we'll just call him
Gordon.
He's French,
yeah.
Jean.
Right, okay, we'll go with that.
Is that a French?
Sorry, I've written down lots of notes, but I don't know. I think it's something like
Pierre.
That's how
like
I learned
that.
In French.
I think
Pierre.
It is something like that, isn't
uh-huh.
it? Yeah.
It's something petite or petite. Anyway, the guy. you don't really, like, it's just about the people looking up at the time. There's just a wee short chapter where he's talking about kind of how they did it and things like that, but it's more about the people down below, and it is a jumpy book, so like there's different chapters for different people, but it's not linear, so it's not like this happened at this time, this happened at this time. It jumps around quite a bit, and usually I hate that unless there's some kind of guidance to tell you where it is. But I really enjoyed this, and I'd forgotten how much I enjoyed it until I reread it again. It's just so really nicely written. And like you were saying, sometimes books and films that have won awards and things, you think, and this has won. It's got a golden sticker on it.
Oh, it has a fancy golden sticker. Yes. What's the award? Oh, a National Book Award.
It's quite vague, but
I think that's the US. No, it's pretty fancy.
Yeah,
yeah,
right, yeah.
It's gold. It's marked.
Yeah.
And usually I would go, no, not for me. But I had read it for ages and ages ago, and remembered it was about this type of walker. Balance, perfect. But it's not about him. It's about all these other people. So it starts out with these two Irish brothers. And Corrigan is the main brother. And he's basically a kind of troubled monk. So he's not like a monk, but he kind of does good works, and he ends up in a dodgy bit of New York helping out prostitutes and things like that. His brother comes to visit, doesn't quite know what's what, you know, arrives at the apartment and there's all these prostitutes coming in and out. Basically he's opened his apartment up so they can use the bathroom when they need to. It doesn't sound very good from all that, but it's really interesting because it's set in the 70s as well, which is I like history but not that close history. There's a lot of references in it to things that I didn't quite pick up, but I did go and look at afterwards. So obviously the Vietnam War, there's like whole political situations and things like that. But again, you don't need to know that because it's more about the people.
Yeah.
So then we also meet this other lady who's lost her son in the war, and she's invited these other mums over who are in the same situation, but she's quite rich and quite posh and they're not so much. And you kind of get the idea that they don't really like her because of that, but deep down they are all the same. And then there's an artist, and then there's an there's a point when all these things collide, not while he's up there doing his title, like later on.
He's up there quite a while. No,
exactly, exactly. At one point, there's like one of the phones ring, the public phone rings, while he's up doing his walk. And it's hackers, so 70s, 80s, you know, they're just kind of coming to that point where they can...
Heist.
Yes, yes.
Called it.
So they randomly dial these numbers to find out what they can and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And this lady picks up and she's basically describing to these hackers what's happening up there. But they're trying to find other information and they're not really interested, apart from one of them who, like, takes a fancy to the woman and basically asks her out on a date.
Oh, that's quite a meet cute. Yeah, I called her to rob her of her life savings.
Exactly, but yeah. But basically, it's just a complete mashup of all these people's lives and how they kind of touch each other without even realising that they are. And then right at the end, there's like a 20 years later or something, in fact, it's more than that. But one of the babies that are in the story, it's her grown up and she goes back to kind of visit New York and visit what's left the family and things like that. And she has a picture that she's always had of, and I'm going to show you, the tightrope walker.
Oh,
and this is a very classic picture that was taken by somebody. But she's kind of describing, you can just see the two towers and you can see the plane.
Yeah.
And she's talking about, because it's not long after that, that yeah. there was the, you know, she says, is that, you know, a kind of...
reminiscent.
But she keeps the picture because her mum gave it to her. But I also wanted to show you a picture of, because this terrifies me, of her crazy man getting ready to walk. But you can see even from there how high up he is.
Yeah, I love it.
And he has no...
For him, not for
no, no, no,
no. No, I wouldn't give that a go.
No, he has no safety net. He has nothing. And he ran across that.
Completely mad.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Love it.
You can tell it's the 70s because there's quite a lot of flares going on there.
Yeah, yeah. And his hair also looks a bit...
But in his chapter, he does kind of talk about how he practices in a field and how... the wind, you know, effects and things like that. At that point, he'd already walked, I think, between Notre Dame and something else, and done another one. But this is the first artistic crime, they call it. Ooh, when he gets to the judge, who basically, because he's done something wrong, he's broken in, he's done all this kind of stuff. And one of the chapters is a bit about the judge as well, and it's his wife that's lost a son, etc., etc. But I just... loved it, and like you, I now suddenly remember I want to go back and read more of his stuff, which does seem to be, although I think he's Irish, set in America during, you know, kind of 70s, but it's just beautifully written as well, you know. It's, I'm not one for when books have no punctuation or you know, all this kind of stuff. I'm like meh. But this has that kind of thing, but without making it really annoying. You know, that you
just quite a good balance.
Yes Thank you, Patty.
We don't need a second meeting. The book's covered it already.
Yes, so
I have to say, I've kind of fallen in love with this Pierre Jean, whatever his name is.
I am going to apologize.
I have to look him up because I am completely intrigued by, well, first of all, his flares, his fantastic fashion sense.
Okay, here we go, Mark.
Oh,
you
what's
that,
his name?
I forgot my glasses.
I can't see where it is.
This is riveting content.
Philippe Petit.
Oh, this was not
which
even
is a
little bit
which
of
which is a great
like,
name.
It's
a great name.
Of course, I love him even more. Oh, fantastic. So what you were saying about the skips in time, are they, like, do they make sense? Is that for a reason?
I think it's because he wanted each character to have their own bit, but some characters meet the other characters at different times.
So does it, like, make sense in
the
end?
It does make sense. Once you realise who Claire is and who Gloria is, you kind of realise, oh, right, okay, they've done this because of that.
I love that kind of thing. I'm so into it. That you, especially when there's like a plot twist element involved, like, aha, this is what it all meant. Oh, so, yeah.
Especially, if it comes together.
And this definitely does.
Yeah, it sounds very good.
The first bit is about Corrigan, the troubled monk, because I put my
Oh, that sounds like a great name as well. This is full of fantastic names. Corrigan.
I don't think it is. I think that's like his surname, but he gets called Corrigan, whereas his brother gets called John. I don't know, sorry. But you kind of think you know where it's going with his section of the book, which is the biggest. I mean, it's only 100 pages, but it's the biggest bit. Mm. And then something happens, and you go, okay. And then it kind of cuts to something else. And then I'm going to say there's a car accident, basically. Oh. And then it cuts to the person, somebody else, and then it goes back to the person in the car who knocks into that car to make that accident happen. Mm. So it kind of jumps around like that. Mm. But it does all come together.
Yeah.
And as I say, it's beautifully finished off with Jaslyn coming back and seeing Claire, who's the lady whose son had passed away, who became friends with so-and-so, who adopted so-and-so because of the car accident, because of so-and-so. It kind of ties it. Mm. It does tie it all in.
Artistic convoluted.
Yes. Meanwhile, you know, there's this guy up to take what, like 110 stories up in the air.
Yeah.
On quite a windy day.
And he's looking down. He's like, "Woohoo! I'm up here.
The new love of my life has been established." Well, as we near the end of our episode, I have a question for both of you. Who do you think won't like this book? I'm overturning the question that I usually ask.
Who won't like this one? If you want a nice, happy story, because it's not nice and happy. It has an ending, and it ends very well, but it's not a they lived happily ever after kind of ending. So if you like that, which I usually do, it's not for you.
No. Oh, it might be for you at some point in time, but not
just not today.
Well, I'm going to steal Percival Everett's quote on this, because he's been asked if they banned the book, because Huckleberry Finn itself was banned a lot of times. And he says, well, anybody that wants to ban the book wouldn't read it in the first place. So I think that's a good answer.
That is a good answer. So this book, I think if you want like a straightforward a glimpse into someone else's life and traumas, this is not it. If you're not into like swear words in books, this is probably not for you. If you like your people that you read about to be seen, this is probably not for you. Everybody else fully recommend.
Okay.
So, well, I think B is thrilled with our choices this time around. What about next time, Jenny? What do we have in store?
So our next challenge is old favourites.
Oh, which two of us already?
Yes,
we can
just
recommend.
Re-record.
Yes. Oh, I'm looking forward to rereading some, because you know when I started rereading this, I wasn't sure. Like I remember loving it. But I'm a different person now, so I didn't know if I would love it as much. I think it was on page like 5 or something. I was cackling away. And I was like, nope, she's still a genius. So I'm looking forward to rereading.
Good.
But yes, so in the meanwhile, I think, that's it from us.
Yes, and thank you very much, Mark, for coming in.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure, and I'm glad I got to speak about this wonderful book.
Excellent. So, bye.
Bye.
Bye.